ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिदां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम्। यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्तुन्नन्दिदिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्दं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः। We are continuing the discussion of the second chapter, and the most important topics discussed in the second chapter is a discussion of the characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. How do we recognize a spiritually enlightened person? How does he behave? How does he act? How does he talk? How does he respond to the external situations? How does he interact with people? How does he deal with conflicts? How does he confront difficulties? It's a very interesting discussion, and it's supposed to be one of the most celebrated discussions in the world. Spiritual philosophy. In the Gita itself, this has got a special significance. It occupies a unique place, the discussion of the characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. So it opens in the form of a question from the student Arjuna. It is the 54th verse. So Arjuna Uvacha, you may find in your book, means Arjuna said, he asked, Sthidapragnasya kabhasa samadhisthasya keshava sthidadhi kim prabhasheda kim asida vrajeda kim. Kim vrajeda means how does he go about walking. Kim prabhasheda means how does he talk. And kim asida means how does he actually interact. It's a symbolic question. Now, I have already mentioned earlier, as part of the discussion, that this description of a sthitaprajna, of a spiritually enlightened person, is to serve as an ideal for self-effort, for a spiritual seeker. Self-effort means we can try to develop some of these characteristics. We can try to develop this even-mindedness, this equanimity of mind, this ability to remain calm and quiet, even while reacting to a complex situation. It doesn't at all imply inaction or inactivity or insensitivity. A spiritually enlightened person will be very sensitive. He won't be like a piece of stone. Not at all. Sometimes there is a tendency among some spiritual students, you know. Oh, he is always without any expression on his face. He's always calm. Calmness can be due to total lack of sensitivity or the ability to be sensitive to other people's problems. So there is a statement in the Vedantic literature, you know, a man of the highest wisdom and a man of no wisdom, there could be some similarities. So you find a very insensitive person, I mean those who have very low IQ, who may not be able to understand what is going around because of undeveloped brain or intellect, may appear to be very calm and quiet. But that could be the calmness or the insensitivity of dullness or incapacity to feel for others. But those who are highly evolved may appear to be similar, only it's an appearance. He won't be agitated, but he is actually organizing, galvanizing, mobilizing his inner intellectual, emotional, spiritual forces to react effectively to a situation so that there will be no energy wasted. There is conservation of energy when you become spiritually enlightened. And there is dissipation of energy when we are disturbed, when our mind is disturbed, our mind is scattered, or when our mind gets fragmented. So, as an example, I shall try to give a short description of the analysis of human mind and its reactions to external circumstances from the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali. Mind you, not yoga asana. It is the psychology and philosophy behind the whole concept of yoga, which is a higher way of life, in short. So the first and most commonly found, kind of mental condition is called vikshipta. Well, to give an example, suppose you read a very good book, or when you go to a place of worship, or when you listen to a wonderful idea, you feel a great enthusiasm, you feel a great joy, not excitement, but you feel a great inner joy. Well, tomorrow I must also try to practice some of these higher ideas. But then when tomorrow comes, your mind is less enthusiastic. Sometimes your mind doesn't cooperate. Mind is not ready to practice what you want really to practice. And again, that evening you read the same book. You listen to those same ideas. The old enthusiasm may return. But again, there is a slowing down of this enthusiasm. It is called vikshipta. So we say shena kshipta in Sanskrit, means it's like a pendulum of a clock. It moves in one direction, then it moves in the opposite direction. But when we try more and more listening to these great ideas, and when we try to practice the non-cooperation of the mind, the mental block, those obstacles will slowly decrease and mind will slowly begin to cooperate, whether you want to pray, you want to read a holy scripture, or even when you want to take up a very good job, for example, which may have some difficulties, but mind may be reluctant. This is the most common type of human mind, and this is very normal. Now, below this level, there are two levels which are more or less abnormal. One is called, you know, kshiptam. Kshiptam means a total restlessness, no attention, no ability to focus on anything. Attention deficiency in its most pathological level is called kshiptam. Moodham also is an abnormal state where you cannot really react to any situation. These are two abnormal states. Above these two levels is what I mentioned earlier, vikshipta, which is like a pendulum of a clock. Well, sincere desire to do something good is there, to practice some higher values, or develop a new habit, for example. Develop a way of doing things differently, which may be more appropriate, which may be more effective, but it is different from what you have been doing till now. So there is a mental block, a non-cooperation from the mind. is called Vikshipta. The fourth and fifth stage are more advanced than found among common people. It is called Egagra Niruddha. Egagra, well, the classic example is the examples of great scientists, musicians, great men and women of excellence who have accomplished great things in science, in research, in different or aesthetic activities, in music, art, literature, and so on. They are able to focus all their mental energies in one direction with great concentration, so they are able to attain great heights in those respective areas. They are able to excel themselves in those in their professions or in the chosen areas. It is called Egagra. See, agra means, you know, the end or the sharp edge of a needle is agra. Egagra means one. So Egagra means one-pointedness. The fifth stage, it is still more advanced, that is stage of a great yogi. A great person. Again, when we use the word yoga, please remember, we do not mean yoga asana or yoga postures. What we are talking about is linking the mind to a higher transcendental ideal, which is a real implication of the word yoga. It's called Niruddha state. So these are the five states of human mind. Now, the question arises, why did Lord Krishna choose to give a list of some of the characteristics, behavior patterns of a spiritually enlightened person? What's the use of giving a list? So it was Shankaracharya who wrote the first great commentary on the Gita, who says all these ideas, the whole list of all the characteristics, the behavior patterns of a spiritually enlightened person has a great purpose. What's the purpose? These are ways and means by which we can eventually, gradually evolve to that higher spiritual status. If we can naturally develop those characteristics in our own life, then one day you end up being a spiritually enlightened person. That's why it is said, you know, the description is to serve as an ideal for our own self-effort. For the spiritual seeker. So, Shankaracharya, the great commentator, gives a very interesting description of this. Sarvatraivahi Adhyatma Shastre Kritartha Lakshanani Yani Tani Eva Sadhanani Upadishyante. And now, it is not in Gita alone. Shankaracharya says, Sarvatra Adhyatma Shastra. In all spiritual literature, in any spiritual literature, this principle applies. When we read about the characteristics, the unique behavior patterns of a spiritually enlightened person, it should be taken as an ideal for us to eventually develop those characteristics. Another great Indian philosopher who took the opposite view of Advaita, means who opposed Shankaracharya's view. You know, India produced not hundreds, thousands of philosophers. Among them, the name of Shankara is perhaps the greatest and the most well-known. That's all. So, another philosopher who took a dualistic view, which means who took the opposite of non-dualistic philosophy, says, Taddhai jijnyasubhiki sadhyam jnaninam yattu lakshanam. So, that means, if you are a spiritual seeker, these characteristics will give you an idea how to move forward, how to go ahead, how to evolve, how to work hard to become an eventually a spiritual person. So, jnani namtu lakshana means these are natural characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. So these are the natural characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. But these are the characteristics which other spiritual seekers slowly try to develop. Another philosopher, Nilakanda, who belongs to Advaita tradition, says, Idevahi Muktanam Swabhavigam Shilam Tadeva Mumukshunam Shastrena Vidhiyede Idi Prasiddhihi. So, all these characteristics of Swabhavigam means second nature. Well, keeping quiet without being inactive, reacting to situations without being insensitive, dealing with a problem without being too much obsessed or enslaved by it, the ability to remain calm and quiet, but at the same time without being lethargic or negligent. Well, these are all natural characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. That's the idea behind. So, now the answer, now we can find the answer. Answer is very interesting. Prajahadi yada kaman sarvan partha manogadan atmanne vatmana tushtaka siddhaprajnas tadochide. He is a spiritually, or she is a spiritually enlightened person. So who is a spiritually enlightened person? When a person is able to cast away all desires from his or her mind. And now this is not possible normally. You know, remember, see, a desire as is a very interesting phenomenon. Can we really live in the world without any desire? In the ordinary course of life, from a purely psychological point of view, you can never really do anything without some idea of a purpose. And you link that purpose to our life. So can we really speak or do anything without any desire psychologically? If you ask a student who is working hard to get a high grade, tomorrow onwards you study but don't have desire for getting a high grade, his mind will go back blank. You have a definite plan, a program, a plan of action, a target to be achieved, and well-structured, well-defined methods to achieve your targets. Now, do try to do things to make your preparations. You forget about the goal to be achieved. You won't be able to remain enthusiastic. You won't be able to remain focused on your work. This is a normal human characteristic. So what is the real meaning of giving up desire? In spiritual sense, giving up of desires means having a spiritual desire. So there is such a thing as sublimation of desire. Giving a promotion to your desire. I mean, desire for higher spiritual enlightenment. That's the desire with which Buddha left his palace and walked 1200 miles from Nepal, Lumbini, the town where we lived. That is, and then he walked 1200 miles and reached Bodh Gaya and sat under a tree, and then he said to have taken a strong vow. So he had given up all desire for kingdom. He was a married man. And actually eventually his wife and his mother all also became his disciples. That's what Buddha's history tells us. But when he was 28 years old, this man gave up his kingdom, gave up his throne, his palace, luxurious life, walked 1200 miles, reached Bodh Gaya and sat under a tree. And when he sat under a tree, he didn't say, I'm going to sit here a while for taking rest. I have no purpose to achieve. No. He had a bigger desire. So the biographer of Buddha's life says, Ihasane sushyudume shariram തികസ്തി മാംസം ച വിലയം ചെയ്യാത്തു അപ്രാപ്യസിദ്ധിയും ബഹുജന്മ ദുർലഭം നൈവാസനാത് കായമതശ്ചലിഷ്യത്തി. സോ ദ ബുക്ക് ഈസ് കോൾഡ് ലളിത വിസ്തര വിജ അശ്വഘോഷ മോസ്റ്റ് പ്രൊമിനന്റ് ട്രഡീഷണൽ ബയോഗ്രാഫി ഓഫ് ബുദ്ധ റിട്ടൺ ഇൻ സാൻസ്ക്രിറ്റ് വേഴ്സസ് അറൌണ്ട് സെക്കൻഡ് സെഞ്ചുറി എ ഡി അക്കോർഡിംഗ് ടു മെനി ഹിസ്റ്റോറിയൻസ്. സോ ഇൻ ദാറ്റ് ബുക്ക് ദി ബയോഗ്രാഫർ ബുദ്ധ His name is Ashwaghosha. He tells what was in Buddha's mind, what higher desire Buddha had in his mind when he sat under a tree to meditate. I am going to sit here. Let my body perish on this seat. Ihasane sushudime sharira means let my body perish sitting on this seat. Let my body get merged into flesh, bones, marrow and blood. Let it perish, disappear, sitting on this seat. He sat, he may have spread some kind of a, not necessarily tiger skin, but some kind of seat he must have spread and sat. And then he says, Aprapasiddhim bhagajadma durlabham. So he had a strong desire. That was not the desire to enjoy his kingdom. He says, without and before attaining the highest spiritual enlightenment, which is possible only through spiritual practices, spread over several life cycles, I will not get up from the seat. So, there was a desire in his mind, but that desire was a desire which is sublime, which gave to the world, which gave the world, we gave us a man called Buddha, the enlightened one. So you can see there is a sublimity to desire, a promotion. So Lord Krishna says, Atmane Vatmana Tushtaka. A spiritually enlightened person is able to give up all his desires because he is satisfied in the self alone. He has a kind of inner satisfaction in the fact, in the feeling, in the experience, I am the Atman, I am the divine reality that is immanent, that is omnipresent everywhere. So, I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not this intellect. I am something much more than all these. These things come and go, but there is something in me that is divine, that's a divine spark, and that's my true nature. This identification with one's own spiritual identity gives you a kind of satisfaction. So tushtaka, I mean the word, I mean atmane vatmana, atmani eva atmana tushtaka. That is the prose order. Atmani eva atmana tushtaka. A spiritually enlightened person is also as a feeling of satisfaction. But that satisfaction comes out of the feeling, I am the Atman. I am not this body. If we identify ourselves with this physical body alone, the physical desires will be the most sublime desire. If we identify ourselves with the mind, then a computer game will be the highest. If we identify ourselves with the intellect, then maybe solving a puzzle or reading a technical manual, that's all. Beyond that, we won't have any idea of satisfaction. In fact, our ideal of satisfaction, in a way, reveals our own actual culture, our character. It reveals what we actually are. You can ask anyone, what is that which gives you a highest degree of contentment? That shows what we actually are. All our mechanical actions, programmed activities for which we prepare, that they will not actually reveal our true nature. What we instinctively engage in, the kind of activity that we instinctively engage in, that's what shows our true nature. So, a spiritually enlightened person also has a higher sublime desire. The desire is to feel satisfied with his own identity with Atman. So he is called Sarvan Partha Manogatan. So Manogatan, you know, the word Manogatan actually reveals that is a mental desire that you have to be given up, not physical activity. Physical activity, it is impossible for anyone to give up. Strictly speaking, can anyone give up physical activity? No, impossible. But we can give up our too much of our attachment to the desires or to the activities themselves. So you have to live in the world, you have to breathe. You have to drink water when you are thirsty. You have to eat food when you are hungry. Can anyone really give up physical activity? So, if you read the verse later again, Prajagadi Yada Kaman Sarvan Partha Manogatan. A spiritually enlightened person gives up all his mental desires, mental attractions, fascinations, etc. Because physical activity cannot be desired. That means the desire for the good of the world is not included. So that should be understood. What is to be given up is the desire that binds us to the world, that fills the mind with more and more desire for physical, material enjoyments in this world. But at the same time, if you have a desire to do something for the good of others, and if we decide to do something for our own spiritual good, that desire should not be given up. Because it is this desire that helps you to give up all lower desire. A desire for higher ideal helps us to give up lower desires. As I mentioned, you know, mind needs some food. Mind cannot be kept hungry for too long. That could cause restlessness, depression, and many other related problems. So mind should be given some food. What kind of food will you give to the mind? Healthy food. So that mind will not fall sick. If we eat bad food, physical food, body will fall sick. If we feed the mind with rotten food, unhealthy food, mind will fall sick. And how does mind fall sick? What is the sickness of mind? Mind's natural fascination, attraction for worldly desires, which never really come to an end. Because every desire is only prelude to more and more worldly desire. So it is often said in one of the Mahabharata verses, that is, to try to satisfy the mind by giving more and more physical food, feeding the mind, giving the mind whatever it wants, material desire. It's just like trying to put out fire by pouring more and more oil on it. You cannot put out fire by pouring oil in it or petroleum in it. No, it will be inflame all the more. So, that fire needs a different kind of material so that it will not burn further. The existing flame will be put out and more, it will not inflame further. That is water. So what is water? Water is giving the mind a higher desire, higher food, a higher ideal, so that mind will take an ascent from lower desire. That's why, you know, Prajagadi Yada Kaman Sarvan Partha Manogatan. Lord Krishna says Partha is a name given, Arjuna is meant by Partha. When a spiritually enlightened person, or when any person gives up all desires of the mind, that means mentally giving up all desire. Even when physically engaged in different activities, mentally giving up all desire. We can actually give up all mental desire, but we cannot really give up all physical activities. Impossible. So, Lord Krishna, such a person is a man of a person of steady wisdom. As I mentioned earlier, when we may take up later, Buddha's Dhammapada. Dhammapada is a Pali canonical literature from the Kuddaka Nikaya. It's in Pali language, not in Sanskrit. It's a corrupt form of Sanskrit, it's a primitive form of Sanskrit, not so refined as Sanskrit language, because it was not standardized as Sanskrit. Grammatical structure and syntax were standardized in 9th century BC. So, this is called Dhammapada, which is being translated into most of the world languages today. You find it almost runs parallel to these characteristics. So, Lord Krishna uses the word a spiritually enlightened person, and Buddha uses the word Brahmana. Brahmana, he means not somebody is born into a particular caste, his group, but a spiritually enlightened person. So Buddha uses the word Pali Brahmanam, in Sanskrit Brahmanam. So we will take it later, another context. So this is the 55th verse, the first characteristic. A spiritually enlightened person will be Atmani Eva Atmana Tushtaka. Tushtaka means contentment. It is not satisfaction in its superficial sense. Because satisfaction in its superficial sense is something that you feel when you get something. And you, when you lose it, it becomes dissatisfaction. So it's just like one side of the coin. A coin cannot have just one side. It should have its opposite side. So, tushti, it's called something called santushti, which means a kind of contentment that comes to you when you feel there is nothing more to be aspired for. Now, this inner contentment, tushti, no one can have by obtaining anything from the world. Tushti is something that gives you the feeling. Well, when a mother works hard to force her son to study hard and the son comes out in flying colors in the university, or a teacher, if an ideal teacher, feels contented when his students do well. The contentment is not something you publish in newspapers. That contentment is its own reward, which you feel within your heart, which nobody may know even. Or when you're walking in the street, a blind man is trying to cross the street, you help him to cross the street, and you go back, you reach your home, nobody knows what you have done, the good deed you have done, but there is something that happens to your mind, because it's its own reward. Now, that is something precious and that is never lost. It is not like one side of the coin. It remains there all the time. So, kṛta-kṛtyata means the inner, the inherent feeling of contentment when we get, when we experience the inner joy that we have done something really worthwhile, is its own reward. That is tushti. So, in its most sublime form, discontentment comes when we realize, not just believe in, but realize or experience our identity with our own soul, spiritual identity. Then comes the 56th verse, that is the second verse dealing with the subject. Dukkeshu anuddhigna manaha, sukheshu vigraspraha, vitaraga bhayakrothaka, sthidadhihi munihi uchyate. So there are two, three, the number of terms are sthidadhihi, and see the prajna. So, prajna sthairyam is the Sanskrit word. Means steadiness of wisdom. And the same meaning, sthidadhihi, somebody, a person, who is dhi, higher wisdom is steady. A person whose mind is not shaken by any adversities. And one who doesn't hanker after happiness. These are interrelated. You can remain unshaken by reverses only if we stop going after pleasant circumstances. So the best way to remain always happy is to stop looking for happiness all the time. So if one wants to avoid unhappiness, it's a very simple method, which we all know technically. Every person, even child, will know that he will not get the candy whenever he asks for it. So we all know that in our life, we will never get everything that we want. If it's a good thing that we don't get what we want all the time. Suppose we get everything that we want, life will be totally meaningless. Life will be bereaved of all its joy. In fact, the whole mystery of life, the joy of life, is always to be working, struggling for something that we do not already have. This is a very important point, remember. Unless one has reached the highest level of spiritual wisdom, he or she should have something to aspire for. Otherwise, he or she would aspire for something absolutely rotten. This is very important. Mind cannot remain quiet. The Lord Krishna says in the third chapter, it's a very interesting principle. Nahi kasikshanamabhi jadudishthati akarma krithi. Karyadehi avashakarma sarva prakritijayihi gunaihi. It's a very interesting verse. Lord Krishna says, Vedantic principle, he says, very good psychological principle, says, no one can keep quiet mentally even for a split second. So, our mind is always looking for new ideas, new activities, new thoughts, new emotions and attitudes. If we do not direct our mind into some creative, constructive, positive channels, then mind will automatically be drawn to some destructive, negative channels. So if we don't give our mind good food, mind will eat rotten food that has expiry date over long back. It's all poisonous. So that's why it's very important. If we don't give our mind good food, mind will eat poisonous food. Therefore, the important point is, the first step in spiritual life is, try to feed the mind with new ideas, good ideas, noble ideas, creative ideas. But then, afterwards, when we face difficulties, when mind gets disturbed, when mind is shaken, then we should know that we cannot always have whatever we are looking for. We have to settle down for things which may not give 100% satisfaction. It's a reality whether we accept or not that we have to encounter. Then why don't we make use of little Vedantic wisdom to deal with that problem, so that the problem will not have a devastating effect on us? So a person whose mind is not shaken by misfortunes, by unhappy circumstances, by adversities, by reverses, because he doesn't chase happiness all the time. Not that he does not want happiness, but he recognizes the fact that he cannot always have what he is looking for. We cannot always have a 100% successful life. Well, from a purely mechanical point of view, suppose we can program our life as we want. Let us say, it never happens for God's sake. Everything will be over by then. But suppose we can program our whole life, a future, past, everything, as we program a machine, then there will be no need for music, for philosophy, for thoughts, for instincts, for humanism, nothing. Suppose we are little small children. Suppose we know what we are going to face in future. Then if we come to know when we are young, of the problems we may have to face in future, it will have a crushing effect on the mind. So mind will not have health, mental health to face those problems. And if, on the other hand, we come to know that our life is going to be wonderful, then we will not work for it. We will not make any effort for it. So this problem of the unknown, the uncertain, is what actually makes life livable. So the reality that we cannot always have a constant, unbroken succession of happy experiences should be recognized. Does it mean that we become inactive or insensitive? Lord Krishna says no. We must realize this as a fact, that there will be adversities and also there will be happy situations. But we should not be looking for happiness all the time, then we will not be experiencing unhappiness anytime. So that is dukkheshu anuddigdamana, not being shaken by adversities and not hankering after happy experiences all the time. That means you are totally free from extreme affection, vita raga bhaya krodha. So raga means extreme affection, extreme fascination, which is a kind of mental and spiritual enslavement. Bhaya means free, bhaya means fear. So extreme affection, fascination, infatuation, and extreme fear and anger. When we look for certain things, we strive, we don't get, and then we become angry, and that leads to problems. So, in all these situations, a spiritual enlightened person remains unshaken. That means this particular verse refers to the giving up of feelings which may be aroused by objects which are pleasurable, which create pressure. At the same time, the need to get out of this infatuation. So, in such a case, you know, you vita raga bhaya krodha, you will not have any kind of extreme mental enslavement, fear or anger. But we should always keep in mind, and that's very important, it doesn't mean that you remain inactive, insensitive, or negligent or indifferent to duties and responsibilities. That should be understood very, very clearly. Because a lot of misunderstanding you find in the name of Advaita, non-dualistic philosophy. Well, I can narrate interesting section from the Gita itself, the fourth chapter. Lord Krishna gives an idea of the tradition of Vedanta and Vedantic teachers. The first, second, imam vivasudhi yogam proktavanaham avyam vivasvan manave praha manu ikshakavaya bravit evam parampara praptam imam rajasyo vidhu sakari nekhamahada yogo nashtaparandava. So two verses. What these two verses implies? This, Lord Krishna says, this ancient Vedanta philosophy of combining the characteristics of a man of steady wisdom that we are all discussing right now and efficiency. Those great kings and emperors, philosopher kings, so to speak, who combined the kingly qualities of efficiency and the saintly qualities of contemplation. They were living in this world for generations. Long back, I taught this great spiritual truth to a succession of teachers, and this was transmitted to a succession of other spiritual teachers. Eventually, what happened? People lost the ability to free themselves from desire. So this great tradition was lost. There is such a statement in the fourth chapter. Now, one word is used here, Rajasriyo Vidhu. this great philosophy of combining, let us say, the efficiency of a Bill Gates, putting in modern 21st century language, and the wisdom of a great ancient saint, let us say, the business acumen, the efficiency, the enthusiasm, what you call professionalism, you may call workaholism, whatever you may call it, of a modern technocrat CEO, and the wisdom of an ancient sage. How to combine these two, roll these two apparently contradictory characteristics, only apparent contradiction, how to combine these apparently contradictory characteristics into one character? This one word, Rajashi. So Shankaracharya, the great commentator, explained this in one of most unique parts of the Gita's commentary, which I will discuss later. Rajanascha Rishayascha Rajashayaka. Rajashi is a person who is a king outwardly, full of enthusiasm, efficiency, very sensitive. Not kings of modern times who are all just figureheads. Kings of early days, they had to be active all the time. They had executive power, judiciary power, legislative, everything was one man on those days. Judiciary, legislature and executive all were rolled into one. That was the ancient concept of monarchy. So Krishna is, Shankaracharya is talking about those days. So you have to be very active, you have to be very efficient, you have to be business-like. Well, like a, let us say, Henry Ford and Rockefeller or Bill Gates, all rolled into one, let us say. So far as the efficiency is concerned, at least you will admit they were not inefficient after all. Now, along with that, can you have the saintly quality of a sage? So what is the saintly quality of a sage? So Shankaracharya's disciple, Shankarananda Saraswati, is another Sanskrit commentator, says, Rajatum Aishirya Sambhati Rishitum Tasyaha Sukshmartha Darsana Kshamatum. This is a quotation. So what is Rajatum? What is kingliness, so to speak? Kingliness corresponds to prosperity, scientific, technological marvels, efficiency, enthusiasm, success in the ordinary worldly business sense. That is what Rajatum or kingliness implies. Rishitvam, Rishi means a saint, sage. Tasyaha sukshmartha dasyanakshamata means a sage, a saint realizes that prosperity, success, all these kingly qualities are necessary, but they have a limitation. The ability to understand the limitation of prosperity without neglecting the need for prosperity. The ability to understand the limitation of material success without neglecting the reality that it is necessary for common person to live in the world. So this unique quality is called the idea of a philosopher king long before Plato was born. He comes from the Bhagavad Gita. He called Rajashi. Philosopher, king. Plato's Republic. And Gita says Rajashi means king, philosopher. Gita puts it, king philosopher. Plato put it, philosopher king. That same thing. So, that's what really happens when a person becomes a spiritually enlightened person and lives in the world. So, you find this unique message throughout the Gita, and that's why it is very important to remember. Spiritual contemplativeness or spiritual contemplation never implies insensitivity, negligence, indifference, a never-care attitude, running away from the problems and challenges of the world. Rather, it is the art of facing these problems in a more intelligent manner. That is, with the mind of a sage, you should approach the problems of a king. That's the real characteristic of a spiritually enlightened person. As far as the world is concerned, we'll continue this discussion in the next session. Now you have questions to ask, you are most welcome. Otherwise, I shall continue for a few more minutes for you. Field is open to you now.
Swamiji.
Yeah.
Is this working?
Yeah.
Okay. There seems to be some riddles in humor in the universe, in human existence. The less one desires, the more one receives. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, again, those desires deal with material desires. And those desires have only one solution. You should have higher desire. Mostly when you talk about desires, you're talking about desires of the same category, the same level, not higher desire. Actually, when you have a sublime desire, actually it's possible to develop a higher desire for a higher ideal only by giving up lower desire. See, look at Buddha. He cannot give a better and much more illustrative example than Buddha. Buddha gave up many things, as we all know. But then with a big desire, he sat under a tree. Naivasanas kaya matasalishid. I won't get up from this seat till I get the higher spiritual enlightenment. So he wanted something. So when you sublimate your desire, when you look for a higher ideal, you automatically look beyond the lower ideals. It's kind of reprioritization. We have a different kind of priorities, really speaking. You can find these examples from great politicians who are not necessarily philosophers in the conventional sense of the term. You find they had big higher ideals for which they lived. So, and for that they had to give up many lower things. I'm giving an example from the ordinary walks of life, including politics, social reforms. Those who worked hard before eradicating poverty, illiteracy, backwardness, social backwardness, or even the emancipation of the country. You find examples all over the world, those who worked put a higher ideal in front of them and sacrifice everything for that, fully knowing, well, that they will have to face problems. So without an element of renunciation of a lower desire, you cannot have a higher sublime desire. So when you extend this philosophy, this thought line, little beyond this, you find that higher spiritual ideals will give us the psychological health to deal with problems of the world. When you have a higher ideal in mind, the higher ideal gives you, it releases a great deal of fresh energy. I gave the example of when we describe Swadharma. When we do our duty as with a sense of sanctity and sacredness, with a sense of renunciation, without much selfish attachment, it actually helps us to go deeper into our own mental world and bring out hidden potential of our own mind. So that's a mystery how great men, social reformers and politicians even, who I'm not talking about politicians in ordinary sense, I'm talking about they were role model. Gandhi was a politician, Lincoln was a politician in one sense, of course, not just politicians, but there was this part of their activities. But they were different. They combined their activities with some higher ideal. So these are examples from mundane world. So when you set before you a higher ideal, then you are able to look at the problems of this world from a higher perspective, and that gives you the ability to cope with these problems because you have something higher in mind. If you don't have something higher in mind, then, you know, we'll be immersed, we'll be lost, we'll get lost in this. So, that's the mystery how these great men could do great things, because they have some ideal which is not part of their own selfish life's plans, you know, for which they sacrifice lower ideals. You know. This idea behind.
Swamiji, you mentioned the idea of steadiness of wisdom. What do you recommend when the mind is shaken, though, for somebody who isn't fully established in D? You know, when we feel the anger, when we feel fear.
Yeah, so one way to deal with the problem is to keep in mind the fact that it's part of the game of life in this world. It is totally unavoidable. As I often mention this, you don't have a single great man or woman, those whom we honor, remember, even after thousands of years of this passing away. They didn't have everything very pleasant and happy in this world. So happiness and unhappiness, pain and pleasure, they constitute part of this game of life. So spirituality or God doesn't take a tablet and you have no problem. No, really speaking, it doesn't happen that way. But spirituality gives us a higher ideal that we can keep in front of us. And once we keep that higher ideal in our mind, we are able to deal with these problems of this world in a more intelligent manner without being shaken, without being devastated. That's the only difference. Those who have a higher ideal will not be devastated by problems. They will have problems. You can't think of a Buddha had a lot of problems. Christ, of course, we all know. I don't think there's any great man and woman, even ordinary persons also, without problems. So, but the difference is, these spiritual ideas enable us to approach these problems, which are unavoidable, from a higher perspective. That's the purpose of spirituality. That's called steady wisdom. So wisdom is not intelligence alone, because there are many intelligent people, very intelligent, with high IQ, totally devoid of any wisdom. And sometimes you come across people who with a balanced outlook, may not have a PhD for any university, but they can handle and cope with the problems of the world than many so-called brilliant people. So wisdom actually is a different kind of intelligence. It is some kind of settled intelligence, refined intelligence. Wisdom implies not only ability and intelligence, but also the ability to handle that intelligence and the skills. That's what wisdom gives you, a tool to handle what we already know. Great examples you can find the teachings of Confucius, Lao Tzu, Buddha, the Indians, Hindu sages, Christian mystics. You find a different approach of dealing with the world. Yeah. From a higher perspective, when you look at the whole thing from a higher perspective, then things appear to be different. So thank you. We will have the next session next Friday. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.